This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
So a new wellness trend has gone viral. It's something called the cortisol cocktail. And the idea is that this drink can lower stress and leave you buzzing with energy. It sounds very tempting. But how much of this makes sense once we look a little closer? Well, Associate Professor Teresa Larkin is from the University of Wollongong, joins us now. Teresa, always good to chat with you.
Nice to be on again.
Now, what is cortisol first for those who don't know what it is and how important is it?
So we couldn't live without it. We might be able to live without a few extra cocktails, but we can't live without cortisol. And so I guess most people know of it as the stress hormone, because it is the main hormone that's released in that fight or flight response. After the initial adrenaline, you know, when we get sort of a fright, cortisol is our stress hormone, and its main function is to make sure that we have enough glucose or sugar in the blood so that we can keep functioning, so that we've got enough energy in those ongoing stressful situations. But it does so many things more than just the stress response. And we need a good stress response because, as we know, we encounter stress all the time. You know, it's a part of our daily life, and it's actually good for our body to have short and contained and safe stresses, like exercise is a stress, or, you know, debating something, really coming to a big decision is a stress. But then once we pass through that and we can calm back down again, then our cortisol might increase during the stress, but then it will go back down. And that's actually healthy. So we want to stimulate our stress response sometimes. But the problem is just if we have a chronic stress and we've always got cortisol in our blood. But it does things, you know, it's important for glucose metabolism. It regulates other metabolism. It also can reduce inflammation. But one of the things that it is most important for are our daily rhythms. So it starts to increase just before we wake up. It's basically our inbuilt alarm clock. It gives us energy for the day, releases glucose. But it also communicates the day rhythms to all of our other organs. So it's what then travels through the blood to tell our pancreas, for example, to secrete more insulin in the day, less in the night. So it's really important for our daily rhythms.
So given all of this information in terms of it, you know, communicating to other parts of the body as well, if we've got really high sustained levels of cortisol, I'm assuming that the communication pathways to the rest of the body isn't that good. Am I correct there?
Yeah. And so I guess one thing that people probably misunderstand is that even when we have high ongoing cortisol, there still will be the daily patterns that change. So we still will have our cortisol increase when we wake, peak during the morning, and then drop off into the afternoon and evening. It's just that we'll do that on a higher baseline. So it might not drop off as fully as it should in between the little ups and downs, which is still going to be higher in the morning and lower in the afternoon. Or it also might not drop off to the same extent overnight. And so then you're absolutely right. If it's not dropping off fully overnight because we're still quite wired and we've got this ongoing stress, then that definitely does negatively impact those communication messages about the body and about what needs to be happening in the day, which is increasing energy, and what needs to be happening in the night, which is really restoring and, you know, slowing everything down. So, for example, we want to do most of our exercise and eating during the daylight hours. And most of our resting during the dark hours. But yeah, we still will have our ups and downs, which is natural over the day. We just can have a higher baseline.
Let's talk, before we talk about this cortisol cocktail, I mean, they couldn't have chosen a better name because I thought, oh my goodness, we're drinking the stuff now. I've got enough of it in my body as it is. Let's talk about the idea of adrenal fatigue. Is that what happens if you have too much cortisol?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting part as well, because the cortisol cocktail is being suggested to help with high cortisol on the one hand and adrenal fatigue on the other. But actually, adrenal fatigue means you've got low cortisol. So I think there's this misunderstanding. And that's, yeah, and that's because, you know, we see things on social media about, you know, have you got cortisol face? And they say that if you put on weight around your neck and you've got a rounder face, that you've got high cortisol levels. But actually, a lot of those symptoms can come more from low cortisol. So people, I think, get a little bit confused with that. So often people who have had, for example, a lot of stress or trauma during their childhood, if they've had a lot of cortisol being secreted in childhood, it actually can reduce later in life, which means that it could be like an adrenal fatigue. And then that lower cortisol later in life is what can cause weight gain and fatigue and things like that, because the fact that, you know, the functions of cortisol is to increase energy and increase glucose and get us moving. So yeah, adrenal fatigue isn't officially recognized as a condition. And if someone had adrenal fatigue and their adrenal glands weren't working as much, then that would also mean that the other hormones that come from the adrenal glands, such as the precursors for testosterone and other sex hormones and hormones that affect our salt balance in the kidneys, that they'd also all be lowered. So I feel like it's a little bit of a simplification to try and, you know, say, oh, this is what we can target.
Now, we're with Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong exploring this cortisol cocktail, which is a drink that's gone viral that claims to lower stress and boost energy. I mean, it sounds very enticing, doesn't it? But can it really change cortisol levels in a meaningful way?
Yeah, it sounds great, doesn't it? Especially the name they've given it.
Mix me one up now.
Exactly. Look, it'd be nice. It's got around half a cup of orange juice and coconut water. Mm-hmm. Some people add a little bit of salt, which I find a little bit strange. It must be a bit strange. And then sometimes they add extra potassium paste or extra magnesium powders. So with all of that, there are some things in it that's good, absolutely, but it's not going to make a big difference to our cortisol. It's not going to change anything in a meaningful way, as you asked. I mean, the main component in that is useful when someone's in chronic stress is actually the magnesium. So magnesium is really important for all of our energy processes. So in all of the different reactions, or nearly all of the different reactions in the body, we have magnesium that's used to make those reactions happen. So magnesium is essential for energy production. And it's interesting because around 1/3 of Australians are low in magnesium. And that comes from leafy green vegetables, whole grains, you know, good foods like that. So the magnesium powder might be useful. Like, that definitely could be useful for people. And you're definitely better off taking magnesium as a powder because it's quite a big chemical. And so it's really hard for them to put it in a tablet form. They just can't put enough in. So it's actually the best way to get that is by powder. And then the other things, they've got positive aspects. You know, the orange juice is obviously good for vitamin C, and that's also linked to healthy adrenal gland function. And it's important for being an antioxidant, which is, you know, helps all of the balance of different hormones and functions. The coconut water is good in terms of potassium, and that's something as well that people generally do get enough of, but we're often getting more sodium rather than the potassium. And for that, that's what I'm curious about, the adding of the salt, because we don't really, not many of us need to add more salt to anything. Not many people are low in sodium, and obviously we don't want sodium to be too high. So overall, you know, there are definitely healthy things in it. It's just that it's quite sugary and it's a little bit salty.
So, I mean, if someone is, I suppose, feeling run down or stressed, what are some healthier ways that we can actually support our energy and well-being without having to turn to some sort of wellness trend that's going viral that might be loaded with sugar and salt as well?
It's interesting because with cortisol, one of the best things that you can do is to really have good daily rhythms. And I mean, that's hard for people who do shift work, for example. But if you're not doing shift work, and even if you are, you know, there are things that you can do in terms of still trying to get good amounts of sun and things like that. So having morning sun, you know, having sun, doing things outside during the day when you can, or just getting sunlight, you know, trying to wind down before bed and not have screen time just before bed or during the night, you know, all of those classic things, because that can change the melatonin, which can change the cortisol. So that's the first thing, you know, it sounds so simple and boring, but it's really true. And I mean, obviously it doesn't matter if you're not doing that every day, but the more you can do that, that makes a big difference.
And a bigger difference than having this cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. And look, the best thing about the cocktail is if you're going to be sitting down and having it with someone else, you know, and you have a chat or something like that, or if you're doing it with a real mindfulness, or you're going to sit down and drink it while you purposefully relax, you know, they're definitely good things to do. So mindfulness, meditation, relaxation, but then other things like, you know, doing exercise, socializing is always great, you know, doing creative activities, writing things down, any of those classic de-stress activities are definitely the best thing for ongoing cortisol, and even things like breathing and breath work.
Teresa, before we let you go, because we're running out of time, in terms of the magnesium, you mentioned that that's important. So does it matter the time of day that you take the magnesium, or is it better to take it at night? Does it help you sleep?
It's interesting because it depends on what it's mixed with. So a lot of the formulations with the powder might contain B vitamins, and so that's better to take that earlier in the day. If it's more a pure magnesium, then that's probably good in the evening. It's one of those ones that I think it's probably better to have smaller amounts, you know, a couple of times in the day rather than all of it at once. But yeah, that's definitely something that you have to sort of check per formulation, because we need it during the day as well, because we need it for all of our processes, you know, digestion and movement and things like that.
Teresa, I think this is fascinating. I love chatting with you. You put this, I suppose you bring us down to earth when it comes to these wellness trends. I don't understand how they just Amazing. Take off when...
Yeah, I know, it's so funny.
We can do this stuff and just be healthier in our normal lives.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for chatting with us. Really appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.